Well, greetings and welcome to this episode of Healing Courageously.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Was that one good?
That was really good.
I wonder if I can reproduce that one later on.
I don't know. We better record that.
Well, it is being recorded.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay.
Just practice that then in the mirror.
This is the month of miracles, March.
Month of miracles.
And we have a lot of good guests on this month.
Yeah,
we have
great.
Another one this episode, JJ.
Yeah.
JJ comes to us all the way from Texas.
All the way from Texas.
And it's these miracles that we're hearing about are true miracles. People go, I ain't no miracles in the world today. No, believe me, there's miracles. And we have four guests on this one that have
We have a bonus.
That's right.
We got a bonus release this month.
We have. Who do we have?
We have Uncle Eddie.
Yeah, Uncle Eddie.
And Randy.
And yourself. And as I start these podcasts on miracles, I always like to remind people that miracles aren't always a burning bush.
Right.
Miracle. Yeah. They're always not. As a matter of fact, there's less than you would think. Healing of cancer, or a blind man gaining his sight back, or mm-hmm. deaf person getting their hearing back. And I think what discourages people is they're looking for those kind of miracles.
The big ones, the obvious ones.
And because they're not seeing them, I'll go along and you can pray for me, but we'll see what happens.
But
in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, when I was getting sober, at the end of every meeting, there was a lady in the back.
Mm.
Sweet old, I can't say her name because of anonymity, but before everybody dismissed, she would say, keep coming back until the miracle happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this every day, like probably 6 days a week for 7 years.
Yeah.
And it hit me one day. The miracle happens every day. And it's not nothing that's going to knock your socks off. That might happen, but the miracle of an alcoholic not drinking for a day. That's a miracle.
Yeah.
An addict not using for a day.
Yeah.
That's a miracle. Somebody that's addicted to porn, not watching porn. That's a miracle.
Yeah.
Waking up every morning and breathing in God's air.
Yeah.
That's a miracle. Yeah. There's so many miracles that happen in front of us on a daily basis. Yet people miss them because they're out looking for the big bush on the hill.
I think we just have to keep our eyes open and be aware of God moving in and through us and around us, all around us. So it's beautiful. Well, I'm excited because this week we have JJ. Randy mentioned he came from Texas. JJ is now our friend. He came to us through our friends, Albert and Lauren, that used to live in California with all of us. And now they've ventured out to Texas. And as Albert is good at doing, he is a good outreach person. Mm-hmm. He's a good reacher. He finds people and creates relationships. So JJ, welcome to the Healing Courageously podcast.
Thank you.
We're glad that you're here. We did a little pre-interview with you a month ago or so now. So I know that we talked about early on, one thing that caught my mind, and I think it's important for our listeners to hear, is your dad is a pastor or was a pastor. Is that correct?
Yes, he is a pastor. I believe he's going on year 7 being a pastor.
Yeah. So I think it's really important for people to know that you come from a deep place of faith as a dad being a pastor. And so we talk about the miracles of faith. And I just want you to kind of share your miracle. Give us a little background on how it started and where it went. And we'll stop talking and let you do the talking.
They don't call you Chatty Cathy for nothing.
Nope, they don't.
Sure. Well, no, first off, I'm really honored to be on here. No, it's an honor to be able to share this, with you two and also with all the listeners here on the podcast. Back in December of 21, I had some unusual swelling and it turned painful within a couple days. I ended up going to the ER and urgent care, to see if they could figure out what was going on. I ended up getting referred to a urologist after an ultrasound. And they were like, there's nothing really that we saw on here, but we're going to refer you, to hopefully get a shed some more light on what may be going on. So that next week I went to the urologist. You know, they checked me out. They sent me in for another ultrasound, CT scan, blood work, all that good stuff. And I went in for the ultrasound that day after the appointment, went in for the CT scan the next morning. And about 30 minutes after the CT scan, while I was waiting for blood work to get done, I got a call from the head urologist from the clinic. And he asked me where I was. And I said, I was at the hospital waiting for blood work. He goes, go to the desk, tell them, you know, Dr. Thompson called you and told you to go ahead and check yourself into the ER. He goes, we just got your results and we need to do surgery ASAP. You do emergency wow. surgery. There was gas and bacteria, you know, below the belt where it shouldn't be. And, you know, they had to get in right away. And you know, of course, you know, hearing them say, oh, we have to do emergency surgery, you know, immediately, you know, it like my head just started spinning.
Oh, I
you
bet.
Know, then having to check yourself into the ER, you know, no one ever wants to have to, you know, do that. Thankfully, it was right around the corner, so I didn't have to walk too far. You know, went in there, filled out all the paperwork. And I called my parents. I said, hey, so I'm actually checking myself into the ER. My CT scan was not good, and they have to do emergency surgery. And they were like, okay. My dad's like, you know, your mom's available to come down, because this was on December 23rd. So my dad was prepping for Christmas Eve services.
Right.
And he goes, I'll come down if you'd like. He's like, but your mom may be more available at this time. I was like, hey, you know, whoever's available to come down, I'm open to it. So they called me back, did all the pre-tests, all that stuff. I ended up testing positive for COVID. You know, at the same time, you know, I know. And with the, you know, with the pain and the swelling and stuff, you know, if I did have any symptoms, I had no idea, because I had been so uncomfortable for so long. It had probably been about a week, you know, a week or 10 days at that point. And so, you know, they took me back to the room, you know, got me prepped. They sent over a couple people from the urology office. It was actually, they share a parking lot, so they were right next door there. And you know, they explained what was going to happen and all that. And I was like, okay. So they took me upstairs. And since I had COVID, there was a separate floor that they did all the operations and the recovery on with, you know, the COVID positive patients. You know, I remember all the prepping, you know, them taking me into the operating room, and then they knocked me out. So, you know, getting to see all the, you know, all the equipment and stuff. And, you know, I was like, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's very impressive. Yeah. So to be able to see all the equipment, I was like, all right. And then, you know, they're like, okay, take, you know, they put the mask on you, take deep breaths, you know, count backwards from 10. And by 8, I was out, you know, like within, you know, you're out pretty quick. Yeah. So I woke up after the surgery. You know, I was in recovery, and I was kind of groggy. I didn't want to get up. I was like, I just want to go back to sleep. And their nurses was like, no, you have to wake up. You know, we had to make sure that you're good. And so I got up, you know, ended up throwing up a couple times, you know, from the anesthesia, and then I was good. So they wheeled me back into the room, and my mom was there. You know, she had come up, and she had been with me through that whole process, from the ER room to the prep room and all that. And that's when I found out how potentially lethal the infection and everything had been. They wheeled me back, and I was getting my bearings and all that. And then my mom explained, she goes, you know, the doctor came in, and after they opened you up, he said, I'm worried, you know, but didn't really elaborate on it. And so, and I said, oh, okay. I said, well, no, I'm glad I'm here. And then she goes, yeah, no, the other thing he told me is that, you know, after the surgery, after everything went well, and I was, you know, off in recovery, you know, said that the combination of the infection and with me being a type 2 diabetic and my blood sugar being high, that combination, I ended up having gangrene. The combination of those two in that area, he said 50-50 people don't come out of the surgery alive. And, from the people who do come out of the surgery, there's a percentage of them who don't survive either. Mm-hmm. So, and it took a couple of days for that to sink in for me. I was in the hospital for 5 days, so I had a lot of time to think, but, just kind of replaying that over and over, it took a couple of days for that to sink in, like I'm still here, yeah. and even today, that's still in the back of my mind,
sure.
Absolutely.
Over a year, they're like, 15 months removed now from that surgery. And I ended up having a follow-up surgery last May, to clean up some scar tissue and do some repairs and stuff. And I'm coming up on the year for that. But, it was just, it just blew my mind how, just with a little bit of pain and discomfort, you don't really know what's going on, internally until you go to the doctor, mm-hmm. And I'm really glad that I did, because, most men are known for being stubborn,
right,
and not wanting to go.
I'm married to one. I get that.
Oh, come on now.
I get that.
So, I've learned to go to the
Yeah,
dog.
He's gotten much better, but been there, done that.
Yeah, so I was just thankful. Obviously my parents were thankful that I did that. And, I've just been very, I've always been aware of my health, but, something like this really puts you on alert. So any mm-hmm. little small thing that may seem to be out of sorts or whatever, it's like, all right, let me monitor this. And if it's not better in, a couple of days, then I'll go. But all of my follow-up appointments so far have checked out great. I was 100% healed from everything probably the end of June 2022, and I started back, toward normal life probably in July.
Wow.
That's when I went back to the gym. Yeah. I'm a runner, so, got back into the, doing some races. Since the surgeries, I've done 3 half marathons and a number of other races.
Wow.
I was able, in September, I got back into serving, probably, I think the end of July, I got back into, back serving at church.
Yeah.
I had been out at church for a few months, mm-hmm. While I was recovering. Mm-hmm. And then in September, I was able to rejoin the worship team. And so that, that was a very special time to be able to do that. And, mm-hmm. And even as I got back to serving and got back on the worship team, and you could just feel the spiritual tension, with the enemy trying to knock me down.
Yeah.
He's always reminding me, hey, you almost left your family without their firstborn. You almost left your friends, without you and stuff. And it was a mental battle for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I ended up going through Freedom Group with some great guys who, still friends with, and we're actually in another group together this time around. And just being able to draw boundaries, with the enemy, and you're like, you're not welcome, you're not welcome in my car, not welcome in my house,
yeah,
you're not welcome anywhere that I go.
Taking authority,
just drawing that line, exactly, yeah. Just taking that and taking the reins and being like, you're not here, you're not allowed here.
No.
Yeah, that's great.
Now, you also had a wound back, right?
I did, yes. Yeah, I did.
I had one for several months on my gut.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine how uncomfortable it must have been for you.
Yeah.
Those things are, it worked.
Yeah. But. Oh, yeah. No, it worked. And, thankfully obviously it was down below, but it was kind of centered. So mm-hmm. I was able, it wasn't in a weird position.
Okay.
Thankfully. I mean, I spent a lot of time laying down and stuff, but, it did its thing. And I think I only had it on for 3 weeks.
That's good.
Before, Yeah, and I was going to the wound doctor once a week, and I had home health twice a week outside of that. And every time, I come to a milestone, the home health nurse would be like, you know what, the next time I come, you probably won't be wearing the wound back. And sure enough, when I go into the next appointment, like, you know what, you don't need it anymore. So, and I just needed the bandage and the little sponge that they use to help the skin continue to regrow. And had that for probably 2 or 3 weeks. And then the last time the home health nurse came, she goes, there's nothing there for me to cover anymore. She goes, so they'll probably discharge you from, home health and wound care. And sure enough, that next appointment, didn't need it. They didn't need to go back to the wound doctor, didn't need home health anymore. And I kept in touch with her, with my home health nurse, just keeping her updated on everything, and thanked her continuously for coming out and all that. She was great. She'd been doing it for over 20 years, and she explained everything really well. When I was staying at my parents, she talked with my mom and explained everything to her and stuff. So it was just, overall, I don't think the recovery could have gone any better, with all the doctors and nurses that I had.
Yeah. I have a thought and a question, and this has come up. When you're in a state of, you're active and you're busy and you run and you're working out, and all of a sudden God says, oh no, we're going to put on the brakes. And, you've experienced this infection that, kind of took over a period of time in your life. We talk about community a lot, of how important community is. What did you do to keep yourself, your mind clear? Because we know how you've talked about the enemy, how he can get in there, not only in that afterwards, but even in the process of having to just lay low and stay low. How did you manage through that? What were some tools you used to get through that downtime?
Prayer for one, just, staying close to God, staying in the word. I was with my parents for the first 3 weeks after the initial surgery, so being able to be there with them every day and, be able to spend time with them. And, my church family, they were huge. Multiple people reached out daily, multiple times throughout the day, just, making sure. I had one friend, he was like, so it means a lot, because sometimes he would text me before I was even awake, because I really didn't have a bedtime or a wake up time, it's kind of, whenever. And, I was like, man, it really means a lot that, to have a text waiting from you, in the morning. And he goes, I just don't want you to feel like you're by yourself. And,
Right.
I know. And even though I knew I wasn't, like, just having that reiterated was huge. But, my church family is amazing. Just everybody who reached out and prayed, and, even if they didn't know what was going on, they still prayed. And, I came back strong. I owe that to God and, my church family who prayed, and my pastors, and everybody who called and FaceTimed and texted and all of that.
The community, and God, Kathy said, we're big on community, and there's something about the power of that community, especially if they're faith-based or they're praying all the time for you. And in 2007, when I was in septic, I was in a coma for a couple of weeks. My AA community at that point, I wasn't back in church yet, but my AA community was just overwhelmingly praying for me. And I think at one point the nurses asked, who are all these people out here that are in the hallway of ICU, right? Or CCU, critical care unit. And Kathy goes, they're all of its AA friends. And she goes, okay, they can come in.
Yeah.
Right. So, it's just that community for me. And then even in last year when I had COVID, I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. Even though I was unaware, especially being in a coma, but in COVID, there's something about that community that praying for us, that there's some kind of special, I'll just say it, there's a power in our rooms. There's a power with the surrounding us, I believe. And it's just the power of prayer that's present all the time when we have that kind of a community around us. I think that's so important for anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think the worst thing for anybody is to end up in a hospital and then die all alone and basically to give up.
Or be all alone, even if they don't die, but just being alone and not having a community.
Well, they basically give up on life because there's nobody there.
They have no one.
So community is huge. You know?
Yeah.
And you know, the other thing I think too, JJ, that people don't understand is that you made it through the surgery, 50-50 chance. And I had the same surgery in 1972 where the doctor says, he ain't gonna make it, right? So we get out of those surgeries and we're good. But people don't understand the recovery, right, that we have to go through and the rehab that we have to go through. And just because we're out of surgery, right, it's not over with. There's still a lot of healing that's got to take place, right? Mm. And so it's
not just physically, I think emotionally too. I think there's a lot of emotional healing that goes into those major surgeries. And then especially when you come out realizing that you were that 50 that made it,
right.
That 50% that made it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, the probably the most emotional moment that I had, aside from when I rejoined worship, was getting to play at Christmas this past year.
Wow.
Because I was supposed to play at Christmas in 21.
Yeah.
And, you know, I ended up in the hospital and I was more mad. You know, like when I went and I was like, man, I'm going to miss playing at Christmas time, you know, because I'd been really excited to do it. But being able to do it this year, you know, we had a Christmas service the week before Christmas at our church. We did 3 Christmas Eve services. And I remember I came off the stage for, it was the very first Christmas Eve service. We had 3. And one of my best friends, it was serving as usher. And, you know, he and I have been in, you know, he's one of my go-to people. And, you know, it's talking with him. So he knew how much this meant to me. And, you know, he just gave me a huge hug and I just started crying.
Wow.
You know, just being able to be able to do that and have that to be back, you know, doing what I love and, you know, knowing that. And so, yeah, this Christmas meant a lot more than previous ones.
And I'm sure even moving forward, it'll be your time of reflection on, you know, how far you've come,
right.
Every day is a miracle when you've gone through something like that. That's beautiful.
Absolutely.
And it's, you know, the in 1972, I literally had died at that point. I mean, I died, right? And then in 2007, I was close to it. And then when you like you, it's 50-50. There's something that happens to us, I believe, at least happens to me, that it changes our life and our perspective on life. And it's almost an overwhelming feeling. How do I deal with this?
Mm.
You know? And I want to say, because this just came to my mind, I want to say this too, is that, you know, I can deal with that. God had a reason for us to live, right? I mean, we're that close to death and he didn't take us. So he's not done with us.
Yeah.
And I think about what happened to me after that accident and the abuse I went through. And there's an incident that happened with me and my stepfather, one of many, many, that he came in my room about 10 o'clock at night, busted in my room, yanked me out of my bed by the hair on my head, and just started beating the living crap out of me. And so I asked my brother several years later, I go, how bad was that really? Because in my mind, I thought it was really, really bad. And he says, Randy, he'd have killed you if I wasn't home. But wow, that's pretty serious, right?
Yeah, you
know, I just figured. But then when I was writing my book, And I wrote about that incident. I lost it. I broke down. It's like, how can anybody want to kill me? Right. So again, there's, I think if we go back to the miracles that people are unaware of, you know, the fact that you made it through surgery was a 50-50 chance.
Yeah.
The fact that you now, the way I understand you, you have a greater appreciation for life. Because it's really easy for us when we go through that stuff, JJ. I say we, I should say me, that we can become another victim.
Mm.
Why me, God? Why sure. Use me, God? Why, come on, all the things I've done for you, and you get, right? But I think it's the faith.
Yeah.
Faith and obedience that we have inside of us, right? So,
yeah,
you know, we just, I mean, we really appreciate your story.
Yeah.
People like you, it's like there's something, you know, here's what they say. I heard this, only an alcoholic can understand another alcoholic. Then I heard only another sexual abuse survivor can understand a sexual abuse survivor. Only somebody that has come close to death can understand a person that has come close to death.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that
commonality that draws you together.
And that when we're believers, it's even
greater.
Greater.
Yeah, that's good.
Absolutely.
So as we start winding down our podcast here, JJ, I have a question for you. For those that are listening, what would you tell them if, you know, having gone through something like you've gone through and realizing what a miracle is, and when you're in the midst of it, we're not thinking miracles. The miracle is the reflection after the healing. But for anybody that might be in a health issue, a dark place, what can you share with them that would give them some hope based upon your experiences?
Yeah, so like I mentioned before, you know, just staying close to God.
Yeah.
You know, keeping your faith. I had a friend ask me recently, going through that, you know, did you ever lose your faith?
Yeah.
You know, when you're going through that, and I can confidently say that I did not, you know, because I had the community, you know, I had, you know, the people praying for me, you know, my parents, you know, took care of me for, you know, 3 weeks. And, but I would say, you know, when you're at that point where you feel like you know, if you're feeling like you can't keep going forward, you know, call somebody.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a believer, pray. You know, call your best friend, call your parents, call a family member, because God will give them the answer that you're looking for.
I love that.
You know, because in that moment, you only want to hear what you feel like is the right answer to however you're feeling, you know, whether you're depressed, you know, laid up, you know, feeling lonely. You only want to hear, oh, you know, well, you know, I'll be happier tomorrow, or, you know, it, you know, I'll, somebody will come visit me tomorrow, you know. But when you get to that point, you know, reach out,
yeah.
Reach out to somebody, you know, because talking to somebody on the phone, you know, and I know that that's not something that's as common nowadays, you know, with all the, you know, the electronics and texting and all that. But I'll tell you, you know, talking to people on the phone and Zoom calls and, you know, FaceTime, that really, really helped me through the first couple months of the recovery, and especially not being in church for, you know, 5 or 6 months while I was recovering from both surgeries. So, you know, reach out, you know, the person you reach out to, they will get back to you if they don't answer. But I mean, no, if somebody sees you calling, I'm sure that they will answer, and, you know, God will give them the words to say to you, to give you comfort.
Yeah, that's great.
To think what we want to hear is words of kindness, love, and hope, right? Yeah.
Just encouragement.
Exactly.
Encouragement. This is funny. I think about this often, that I can remember people when I, in 2007, telling me how good I look, right? Okay, great. Whatever. I mean, I looked in the mirror. I thought I was death warmed over, but you look great, Randy. And then I show up to my AA meeting, and it's a complete different story. You look like death warmed. I didn't think you were gonna. I've never seen anybody that sick and live. You know, so it's like, oftentimes too, JJ, and maybe you can relate to this. We just need somebody to talk to. Just somebody to listen to us. Not give us any answers, but just say, hey, man, I'm really struggling. Oh, yeah. Right now, I'm hurting inside. I know God's going to take care of me. I understand that, but there's still a little bit of fear in there. You know, I mean, we're human beings, right?
That's good.
We don't need judgment or anything like that.
Yeah, I think at that time we just need somebody that can just be on our side and hang with us, be with us, listen to us. So that's great. Well, we are super, super happy that you. You were the 50% winner on that. Grateful to have you on the Healing Pregnancy Podcast and grateful for our friends, Albert and Lauren, who have expanded their friendships and we will be coming to Texas. Yeah. We have it on our bucket list this year.
So I took one of the reunion JJ and Justin and our
Lauren, we'll have to get together. So we're looking forward to truly meeting you in person then. So thank you again, JJ, for participating.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, absolutely. We're grateful for you. So as we get ready to close, we have a couple things. Our call to action this month is to tag a friend, invite a friend, join our social media. This podcast is on Spotify and we're looking to increase our followers. So if you are not following the Healing Courageously podcast specifically on Spotify, we ask that you go to Spotify, sign up and follow and like.
It's just real simple.
Yeah.
Click a button. That's all you got to do.
You can click a second button that will give you a notification that when the podcast is released, it's available to you as well. So
and you're helping a great cause.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing we have this month is a freebie. We're giving away a freebie. It's Randy's 7-day workbook challenge. Yep. If you go to changeyourlifestorynow.com, there is a contact page there. You fill out your information. There is a little tiny box. We ask that you check that box and it gives us an opportunity to put you on our e-letter that goes out one time a month. Once a month, we send out a letter. Just kind of updating you with what's coming up for the month, encouraging words, anything new that we're finding in our industry that we want to share with you. And then my final pitch is for the courageous.
Well, let's go back to the Change Your Life story. Now they still have the 30-minute free consultation.
Oh, yes. If you are looking for life coaching and you still have that free 30-minute
consultation. Right.
So you can also sign up for that there as well.
Yeah.
And then my final pitch is the Courageous Healers Foundation. That is our nonprofit foundation where we help men, women, and families heal from the scars of trauma, whether it be sexual abuse, if they're having marriage issues, personal issues, business issues, anything along those lines. We are able to help people at little to no cost, especially those that don't have insurance. It's really important that they get the help because so many people, if they don't have insurance, they just give up. And we don't want them to give up. So we are taking donations as we have always done. And your donation helps those people. There were 116 hours last year that we were able to help people who had no insurance and needed some healing in their life. So donations can be done on a monthly donation. You can sign up to have it done monthly. You can do a one-time donation. If finances are not in your order right now, we ask that you prayerfully keep the Courageous Healers Foundation in prayer because we know that there are so many people out there that could use and need, not just use, but they really truly need healing in their life. So you can go to courageoushealers.org. That's our website there and find all the information. It will also give you, there's some testimonies in there, stories in there that will, you know, give you a little idea of what we're, who we are and why we do what we do. And then you've got some books you want to talk about, don't you?
Yeah, we'll talk about the change your life story. That's one we can talk about, right?
Yeah, you can talk about that too.
Healing the Wounded Child Within. It is a number one international bestseller, number one in 5 mental health categories. Right. It's a book of hope and healing, available on Amazon and paperback, Kindle, and on Audible. That's also available in Spanish.
Yes.
Right? Finally got that out in Spanish. Beautiful. We have the 30-Day Devotional of the Wholeness, which is a great devotional for couples to do together,
yep.
Right? Our couples and our groups, they did that for 30 days, and it really helped them, you know, grow together. And then, of course, the 7-Day Challenge.
Yeah, workbook. The 7-Day Challenge workbook, that you can get that for free just by going to changeyourlifestorynow.com contact page. You'll get a PDF version of that. Right.
All the books are available on Amazon.
Yeah, so right? I think that's it. JJ, thanks again for being part of our podcast and joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you all very much.
Yeah, you bet.
You bet. So, you got anything else?
I got nothing.
Are we having chicken dinner or fish dinner tonight?
Fish dinner tonight.
Well, then how can you be winter chicken dinner?
I don't know. You came up with that one.
Gosh, have mercy, man.
You did that one.
You told me we were having chicken. That's okay. Why I said it.
All right.
Oh, we're having chicken of the sea.
Okay. You sound like a 6-year-old tricking you with a fish thinking it's chicken. Gosh, we better close this out.
All right. Remember, if nobody tells you they love you today, Randy does.
Kathy does.
More importantly, God does. Be blessed, everybody. Have a great week. We love you all.